last night a dream that the world had turned around. All our hopes had come to be, and the people gathered around. They all brought what they could bring, and nobody went with that. Other than a song to sing, the revolution starts now.
Good afternoon and welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have a great show for you today. David Hanna, the Conservation Director of Wild Virginia, is here, and we're going to be talking about our very own George Washington National Forest. You can always stream this or any of the other great programming on WRIR Live 24/7 at WRIR.org. This show will be re-aired tomorrow on the web stream, Wednesday, August 31st at 11:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. So you can listen to this show over and over. We want to give a special shout out to all the returning students from VCU and the University of Richmond and Virginia Union University. We're so glad you're back. We missed you. I want to tell everybody that the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is sponsoring its third 21-day vegan kickstart starting September the 5th. I've done it twice. It's so much fun. All kinds of webcasts and videos and emails from celebrities and recipes. You can sign up at pcrm.org if you're interested. The conference called the Military Industrial Complex at 50 is going to be held in Charlottesville, September the 16th through the 18th. The group WarIsACrime.org is going to be leading the discussions, the planning, and the organizing. They want you to know that the current wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, and Somalia, and smaller military operations in over 100 countries around the world, are all part of what President Dwight Eisenhower 50 years ago termed the military-industrial complex. We spend more than half of our federal budget on the military, and if we cut it by 85%, we would still have the largest military budget in the whole world. And so come out to that if you're interested in finding out more about changing the military complex at 50 in Charlottesville on September 16th through the 18th. WarIsACrime.org. I want to introduce you now to my guest, David Hanna. David Hanna joined Wild Virginia as the Conservation Director in November of 2006. He received his Master of Science degree in Wildlife Ecology from the University of Florida, and he's worked as a professional in the conservation and natural resource field since 1993. David, it's great to have you on Indie Media Live again.
Well, thanks for having me back, Rebecca. I really appreciate it.
Let's jump right in and tell our listeners what Wild Virginia is, who Wild Virginia is.
Sure. We are a small grassroots nonprofit organization. We have an office in Charlottesville, but we have members around the state of Virginia and some from outside of the state as well. And our reason to be is to protect the wild forests that are left remaining in Virginia. And most of those occur in the two national forests in Virginia. So that is our mission, is to try and protect permanently the wild forest in the National Forest of Virginia. We do that in a couple of ways. We started in 1995, and the real intent then was to monitor timber sales that were going on in the National Forest. At that time, there were still a number of sales that involved old growth forest. And so a lot of people here in this area were upset with that, and I got very involved with the Forest Service to try and prevent those sales. Since that time, we've sort of evolved and taken on bigger means of protecting the forest. We still monitor all the projects that are proposed for the forest, including timber sales and road construction and things like that. But today, we try to do a lot more education and outreach as well. And we also, for your listeners, we have monthly hikes. Once a month, we have a hike. Most of the time, it's in the George Washington. During hunting season, we may go somewhere else to avoid conflicts there. But we'd love for people to get out into the forest, to get to know the forest, to learn about it, to enjoy it, and just have fun. So in addition to that, we have quarterly newsletters, emails, website, Facebook, sorts of things you might imagine that everyone has today to try and inform people about what's going on in the forest and what we're doing to try and protect the forest.
And I'd like to tell everybody wildvirginia.org for more information. If you'd like to give David a call, 434-971-1553. David, you mentioned that Virginia is lucky enough to have two national forests. Could you tell us about them?
That's right. The Jefferson National Forest is in southwestern Virginia, and the George Washington National Forest is further north. Both are in the western part of the state, in the mountainous areas of the state. Together, it's about 1.7 million acres of land in the two national forests. So it's a large bite of the forest and of the mountains in Virginia. And that's part of what makes them both so special, and part of the reason why there are still some forests and natural areas there that are very special and worthy of protection.
People might be surprised to hear you talking about roads and logging and that kind of activity in a national forest. Could you explain that to us?
Sure. You know, you're right. A lot of people are surprised to learn that things like timber harvest, hunting and fishing, mining goes on in national forests, but that is by design. National forests are very different from the way national parks and other natural areas are managed. From the beginning, the national forests were a source of timber for the country. Something people don't realize as well, though, is that in eastern United States, they were also set aside to protect our water quality and our navigable waterways. So in eastern U.S., timber and water were the two reasons that the national forests were formed. And historically, timber has been logged. There has been livestock grazing. There has been mineral extraction and mining in some cases. A lot of this happens more out west than it does in the eastern part of the country. But all of these are activities and resources that are used or extracted from the national forests. Unlike national parks and other areas where the emphasis is on biodiversity and outdoor recreation. So there has always been some conflict by the users of the forest in how our national forest should be managed and what is best for the national forest and what is best for the public.
I know that the George Washington National Forest is special in so many ways, but could you tell us a little bit about this forest?
Sure. Well, I mentioned a few minutes ago about the large size of both the Jefferson and the George Washington. The George Washington is the largest national forest in the eastern United States. By itself, it's more than 1 million acres in size. So it has some vast areas that are pretty remote, some areas of forest that are large in size and somewhat undisturbed by humans compared to private lands and other parts of the forest. So to me, that is one of the most special things about it, is its large size, especially here on the eastern seaboard, and the fact that it does have large areas of somewhat undisturbed forest and often somewhat mature forest, too, forests that are 80 or 100 years old in many cases and sometimes older. That is a type of forest that used to dominate the United States, especially the eastern United States, but there's so little of that left now, at least in large chunks of size, that a place like the George Washington is special in providing habitat that is pretty rare across the landscape.
David, who lives there? What kind of critters live there?
All sorts of critters live there. there's a great population of black bear, as most folks know, but white-tailed deer, of course, are abundant. But just you can't imagine all the wildlife. There's so many birds that use the forest. In May and June, during migration, it's just a symphony of sound as birds migrate through and some set up territories to breed here. Lots of raptors, animals that you wouldn't find in other places, again, because of the large size, like the bear, bobcats, timber rattlesnakes are there. There are a lot of nice reptiles and amphibians. Salamanders. There's a critter called the cow-knob salamander that lives at high elevation on Shenandoah Mountain, and that salamander is found nowhere else in the world. only in this tiny little area of Virginia and West Virginia on the border, the ridgeline that forms the border between the two states, is it found. So a lot of unique things in the GW that make it special.
And what about some of the flora? What kinds of, you mentioned that this is the kind of forest that would have abounded in this, on this continent centuries ago. What kind of trees and other flora are there?
Yeah, the most abundant tree are oaks. And, of course, and that's in part because the chestnut, the American chestnut, is no longer a real viable species in the eastern United States, although there are some restoration efforts and some experimental plots have been placed in the National Forest to try and bring back the American chestnut. So in a few decades, we'll see how that process is going. But mostly oak trees, oak and hickory forests, some pines at lower elevations. What one of the things that I like, and this is in any forest here in this area, is during the early spring, before the deciduous trees have leafed out, you see just abundant wildflowers that come up early, these spring ephemerals, that come up while the forest floor is still getting lots and lots of sunshine. So a wide diversity of plants on the forest floor. And a few rare species, too. There's something called the Virginia least trillium. So it's a very small trillium plant that's globally rare, found in the Shenandoah Mountain and GW in general. And there are sort of microhabitats as well. There are shale barrens at different places in the forest. So these are areas where the soil is very, very shallow and infertile, and the shale underlying shale formations are near the surface. And so you have plants that are adapted to that soil and also the real dry and desert-like conditions, very harsh conditions that are there. There's a plant called the shale barren rockcress that's found here, along with some others. So lots of sort of unique kinds of habitats throughout the forest as well.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live on WRIR. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with David Hanna, the Conservation Director of Wild Virginia. We're focusing today particularly on the precious resource here in Virginia of the George Washington National Forest. David, let's drill down a little bit on what's going on with the GW right now. I know that there is the process now of creating the forest plan for the next 10 to 15 years of the future of this amazing resource. I'm wondering if the forest needs our help and needs our attention.
Well, it does. You know, as I was saying a few minutes ago, national forests are managed for multiple uses, for many, many different types of uses, unlike a national park or other place where biodiversity or wildlife or recreation are the main thing. So it is always a challenge to put a plan in place for how the national forest will be managed. A lot of people believe there should be a balance of resource use and resource extraction, in addition to recreation and management that will favor wildlife and biodiversity. So since so much is allowed in a national forest, it really, really is a challenge. And it makes it necessary, in my opinion, for folks and organizations like us to step forward and try to influence the forest plan to make sure it does look at the long term and does protect these populations of some of the animals I just mentioned, the cow-knob salamander, some of the rare plants, trout, native brook trout occur here in abundance in Virginia, at least for now, and it's important to protect the water resources that the brook trout depend on. So it does come as a surprise to some people that it really is necessary and helpful for people to get involved and express their thoughts to the Forest Service about how the George Washington should be managed, and I do think it is very, very necessary.
And it's we have until, I believe, October 17th as citizens of the country to have input on this process?
That's right, Rebecca. We do have until October 17th for people to submit comments on the draft plan. This process has been ongoing for a number of years, as you know. We won't go into all the details, but it started back in 2007, and now we finally do have a draft plan in place that we can respond to and review. The Forest Service has a website where all of the planning documents are available for reading, as well as the maps and other associated things. It's a large document. I don't anticipate or expect many people to read the thing in its entirety, but there are one or two summary documents that are very helpful for people. And our website, wildervirginia.org, we do sort of synopsize and summarize the issues in the plan, and we do have some sample letters and some sample talking points that people can use if they do want to send a letter or an email to the Forest Service to comment on the plan. Our website also has links to the Forest Service website, so it's easier probably to get to the Forest Service website from our site than trying to find it directly. But it is important, I think, for people to weigh in and express their opinions, because these are public lands. They are our lands. They belong to all of us, all citizens of the United States. And because of some of the things I was saying earlier about how our national forests are managed for resource use as well as other things, I do think it's very, very important for people to let the Forest Service know how the land should be managed. And, in fact, priority should be on things like wildlife species and rare plants and animals, as opposed to timber harvest or oil and gas extraction or other types of activities like that.
What are some of the issues that Wild Virginia is particularly interested in the forest plan as it's proposed?
Well, there are an endless number of issues, so I'll just limit to a few of the most important ones. In our minds, the ones that sort of rise to the top. First, are sort of the special places in the national forest. I've said a few things about rare plants and animals or threatened and endangered plants and animals. So we think all of those places where those animals occur and where natural communities occur that are uncommon or rare across the landscape, that those all need to be designated as what are called special biological areas. And there's an agency in the state, the Virginia Division of Natural Heritage, whose mission is to identify and monitor rare species and unique plants and animals across the entire state. So we think the plan, the draft plan, should take all of the recommendations from the Natural Heritage Program into account in identifying these special biological areas. But beyond that, we do have some existing wilderness areas in the National Forest. The draft plan recommends a few more, but we think their recommendations are for new wilderness areas are really, really inadequate, do not go nearly far enough, and so we would like to see additional areas recommended for wilderness. In fact, in the draft plan process, areas were identified that are called potential wilderness areas, and these are actually roadless areas. And roadless areas are pretty much what that phrase sounds like. They are large areas of the forest, 5,000 acres or larger, that have very, very few roads in them. And so they are important for things like wildlife habitat, for drinking water quality, for recreation, a remote backcountry source of recreation, as well as hunting and fishing. So we would like to see all of these potential wilderness areas or these roadless areas protected and maintained in that current state and not be opened up to timber harvest or new roads. The current draft plan does allow about 80,000 acres of these potential wilderness areas to be open to timber harvest, and so we think that needs to be changed in the draft plan. So these unique and special places are the first thing that we focus on in the forest plan and things that we think need to be changed and protected in the forest plan.
David, that just breaks my heart when I hear a proposal to open up 80,000 acres of roadless area for timber.
Yeah, it is. We take exception to that as well. Now, these 80,000 acres are not, they don't have any formal, or these potential wilderness areas, I should say. Some of them are off limits. There's 370-some thousand acres in potential wilderness areas, and most of that is off limits to timber harvest and new roads. But again, about 80,000 or so acres are open to that in the draft plan. And again, that's one specific comment that people can make to the Forest Service. And we have made that point in the past, and we'll continue to do it in the future. And one of our letters on the website makes that point specifically.
That- That's one thing that I've really appreciated about the work of Wild Virginia as I've made my comments to the Forest Service, because I may not have walked it as much as you guys have or know it as well as you do. It's really helped me to have specific names and specific locations and contiguous areas that you may know about that I don't, that I can use in my comments as well.
And that's part of our reason to be. We want to be a resource for people who feel like you do and who feel similarly as we do, because it is not everyone does have the luxury of the time to read the documents, but also to know the forest that well, to spend that much time in the forest. And so we want to be an advocate for all those who do want to see it protected for the long term.
Yeah, because if I do have the chance, I want to know it's there. I don't want it to have all been logged away and now that I do have the time to go, I have nowhere to be wild. I think that the forest is much more than government plans and policies and graphs and charts and statistics, and more than the materials that can be extracted from it. It feels to me like one of the great resources of a forest must be its wildness, that place of retreat.
That's certainly what we feel, and we think that George Washington is one of the rare places, again, in the eastern part of the country where you do have some wildness left, and you do have remote areas where people can get away from it all and escape sort of the modern world. I have a friend who says that he thinks the Shenandoah Mountain area, which is in the George Washington, is sort of the best getaway, the best remote area or resource in all of the eastern United States between the Great Smoky Mountains to the south and the Adirondack Mountains to the north. And I tend to agree with that. It really is a unique and special sort of place, and we do need to protect it.
If you're just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with David Hanna, the Conservation Director of Wild Virginia. We're focusing specifically today on the opportunity that we have to make comments to the United States Forestry Service about the future of the George Washington National Forest. We have until October the 17th. If you'd like to make your thoughts known, there is information available at wildvirginia.org. David, where would people call or email or send letters?
Well, the comments, and they can be letters or emails. Phone calls will work too, but emails and letters are probably more effective. They would go to the Forest Service office in Roanoke, Virginia, and all of that information and links to that the email address and whatnot are on our website.
I am interested in the last couple of minutes that we have in talking about some of the pressures on the forest. You said the timber, but aren't we also looking at some oil and gas exploration and maybe the possibility of wind energy in our George Washington National Forest?
Yes, we are, and I'm glad you brought that up, because those are definitely issues that come up in the draft plan that need to be addressed. Energy is probably the biggest frontier for conflict on the National Forest. Oil and gas exploration, more than 90% of the forest in the current draft plan, more than 90% of the forest is going to be open to some sort of oil or gas leasing, and we find that objectionable. You know, we contest or argue that probably none of the forest should be open for oil and gas exploration other than that part that is where private mineral rights are privately owned. And about 16% of the forest, the mineral rights or subsurface rights are in private ownership as opposed to national forest ownership. So that's something many people aren't aware of, and it's not something we can control. But the land that is owned and controlled by the Forest Service, we think, should be off limits to oil and gas exploration. There is one positive thing in the forest plan. There is a prohibition on horizontal drilling, and if that prohibition stays in place, which we hope will, that would effectively not allow hydraulic fracturing or fracking to occur in the national forest. And that's a threat in the eastern United States now. People have probably read about what is happening in Pennsylvania and New York with fracturing or fracking, and all the water quality and environmental concerns and issues that go along with that. We definitely would like to see that not happen on the George Washington. And so that's one of our stances as well, is not to allow hydrofracking.
David, what brought you to this work? We introduced you with your amazing resume at the beginning of the show, but why does the forest matter to you so much, and what really brought you to this work?
Well, I guess I get a real sense of satisfaction out of trying to protect and maintain for future generations the resources that we have. I personally just think it's wrong to mismanage lands and to not manage them effectively and to manage them for the long term. So I get a lot of personal satisfaction out of the work I do, even though I must say that dealing with forest plans and projects and whatnot, you were saying earlier things about statistics and graph charts and this, that, and the other. That is not a lot of fun to deal with, so I try to keep the bigger picture in view as I do my work. And one of the perks is that on occasion I do actually get to go out into the forest and have some fun. So I enjoy that. I wish I could get into the forest more often than I do, but the occasional opportunity to go out and just knowing that I think I'm doing something important, those are some of the things that keep me going.
Well, just real quickly as we wrap up, you mentioned at the top of the show that Wild Virginia sponsors hikes into the forest around this area very regularly. What are a couple of your favorite places?
Oh, gosh, there's so many favorite places, so many great places. I like the Shenandoah Mountain area, and there are many, many hiking trails there and spots there. Ramsey's Draft Wilderness is a great place with lots of good hiking trails. Our September hike, which is September 17, I believe, is going to be at Hone Quarry, which is kind of in the middle of the Shenandoah Mountain area. So we'll be hiking up to the ridgeline. There should be some good views of Rodeless areas, the Little River Rodeless area to the south, and let's see, Oak Gum Rodeless area to the north. So Shenandoah Mountain in general is a great spot for me, one of my favorite spots.
Well, we thank you so much for being here, and just I'll keep announcing to people the October 17th deadline, and I really, for comments to the Forest Service, and I really thank you for giving us the sense that our input does matter and that we can have something to say about the future of this incredible resource as well. Thank you so much for being here, David Hanna.
It's been my pleasure, Rebecca.
Until next week, when my guests will be Steve Northup and Jerry Givens from Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, I thank you all for listening, and I hope that you will be kind to yourselves and kind to each other, kind to the animals and to the planet, but not silent. Don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. Peace out.